Welcome to the Making of a Thought Leader podcast. This podcast is designed to encourage entrepreneurs to build their thought leadership in a simplified and a systematic way. I'm your host, Surbhi Dedia, brand strategist, entrepreneur, founder of Digital Genie, and also founder of jotmybio.com. I'm passionate to help fellow entrepreneurs, executives, and individuals to think and thrive on their thought leadership. So grab your headset, turn up the volume, and join me here to get the boost of encouragement you need to build your thought leadership every episode. Hello and welcome to the Making of a Thought Leader podcast. This episode is all about storytelling, building that narrative in context of what's happening around us, and how can we build the narrative consistently in a hyper-digital environment. Sharing his immense experience and knowledge, we have on the show Rahul Mudgal. Rahul is a seasonal marketer and has led various marketing leadership roles in India and in Singapore. On this episode, Rahul talks about visionary storytelling. He believes that building thought leadership and applying visionary storytelling is quintessential to building brand leadership. Over the years, Rahul has been building his own thought leadership and shares his opinions and voice on CMO Council post and on his LinkedIn account. So let's hear from him some amazing ideas on visionary storytelling.
Hello Rahul, welcome to the Making of a Thought Leader podcast. It's absolutely my pleasure to have you on board today.
Likewise, pleasure's all mine.
So, we've been talking on different topics, and one of the topics that often comes along in our marketing world is storytelling. And in our conversation, you always mentioned this point of visionary storytelling. So I thought for our conversation today, it will be really nice for the audience to know your thoughts about storytelling and why do you say visionary storytelling?
Sure. It stems from the fact that if you look at all the sort of trillion-dollar businesses that have been built to scale in the world today, they are built on a narrative, right? So it all began with the story, whether the story was about the founder, mm-hmm. about the problem that the business was trying to solve for ahead of everyone else, or how a business could see the future in a way that it manifested 10 years out. That none of us could. Right? So a great example would be the visionary Steve Jobs, mm-hmm. and how he saw a problem that nobody else could foresee, mm-hmm. how he solved for that problem much ahead of his times, and anyone else being able to imagine how to solve for that particular problem. And now you and I roam around with these devices in our pockets, right? So therefore, I think, and obviously, you might argue that, there is only one Steve Jobs that comes along in a century. But how is it that all of us could essentially have that sort of a mindset or a mental model to think about how we tell stories, whether it's about ourselves, mm-hmm. about the lives that we've had as founders, as professionals, as marketers, but also how businesses can really transcend their own narrative, not limiting themselves to talking about a product or a service, but essentially having a mental model to talk about themselves in the context of the world around us.
Mm-hmm. That is so interesting. Let me just kind of unpack this a little bit because it kind of came to me in intense way, because you said, how do you as an individual put yourself out there, tell your narrative, individual meaning, not personal. I mean, probably personal level also, but we are talking in the context of professional level here. And then how do you connect those dots to what is happening around you? With that example in mind, that the storytelling is everywhere around us. In fact, we have been telling story as a human race, has been telling story from the beginning. So what you're saying here is that when you say visionary storytelling, put yourself out there in sense of what is happening around you, and now start building that narrative through the lives that you've led or through the experiences that you've had.
Absolutely. I mean, what you said just reminded me of Ferrari's book around how we love to tell ourselves stories. One could even argue things like money is a great story that we tell ourselves. And we believe that a certain piece of paper has a certain notional intrinsic value. And then we exchange that value and we trust our banks with that value, right? So it's inherent in all of us. You know, we want to tell stories. Also, another important aspect of storytelling is that we want to have a sense of belonging, right? So whether we identify with a certain community, with a certain belief system, with a certain way of being, right? So we as human beings love to tell stories, but also stories that allow us to belong to something which is greater than ourselves, right?
Right.
And how is it that the brands and businesses can really catch on to that human instinct and be able to tell stories that are compelling, that allow for people to have that sense of belonging to a community or a system of belief or that is beyond themselves, beyond their immediate environment?
We are living in a world which is so fast and dynamic, right? Like today there is, you know, social media or like world of TikTok, and the next thing you know, there is ChatGPT, and the next thing and the next thing. How does one really in this situation, because I don't think 10 years back we were in such an overdrive. How does one build that visionary story? How does one have the tunnel vision to think so far out and build that narrative?
I digress for a moment and before I address this question, because this is a question often everyone grapples with, right? So whether you continue to play catch up, where you know you're always playing catch up with what's the hottest medium out there to tell your stories, or you have a mental model that allows you to simplify what's happening around you and tell your stories regardless of the hottest medium out there, TikTok being one example, right? So if you go 20 years back, right, so it's sort of pre-digital, if you will, right? Yeah. So the most common way of telling stories was linear television, right? So linear television and advertising, whether it was on the television or on radio or out of home advertising, right? And from all of that came along digital, right? And the way we tell stories changed. And now you have these algorithms, whether it's the Google algorithm or the Facebook algorithm or TikTok, that decide what stories get consumed, right? So we have this entire dichotomy of two challenges. The one challenge is what I refer to as filter bubbles, right? So filter bubbles is essentially those algorithms that serve a content ahead of every other piece of content. So how do you fight those filter bubbles and get your story ahead without necessarily having to spend a lot on, say, advertising? You know, how do you get your story ahead of the filter bubbles? The other problem with the dichotomy is what I refer to as echo chamber, right? So echo chamber is that, you know, I know Surabhi and Surabhi and I have 10 friends in common. And if we are sharing a piece of content, then it gets consumed and liked. And, you know, those 10 people that we know in common are engaging with that piece of content, but we never necessarily step out of that echo chamber. And we are continuously consuming content being shared amongst the 12 of us, right? So how do you get the story to transcend filter bubbles, which is the algorithms, and how they serve up content, and how do you transcend echo chambers, which is how do you get your content beyond your immediate circle of influence?
Right.
And the way you do that is where you identify who are you trying to reach, and why is it your story is relevant to the audience that you're trying to reach. Because right. I think end of the day, if I were to simply define marketing, and there've been many definitions, but mine is a very simple one, which is you're trying to maximize your relevance and your reach to the people that you most care about. Mm-hmm. And to the people who you want to be caring about you, essentially, yeah. right? And so how is it that you can then transcend the medium and tell stories which are meaningful, which make sense to that audience, which are relevant to that audience, right? So therefore, you have to think, if you are telling a brand story, whether it's about a product or a service, how does it transcend the medium and how does it become relevant to the communities that you're going after?
Right.
So it has to be a concerted effort, which starts with asking a very genuine question. And the question is, how is it that you want to be relevant to the people that you want to reach to? And once you have answered that question, I think it's an iterative process. It will not happen overnight, right? Because you understand that algorithms are way smarter than us. ChatGPT is way smarter than us. And therefore, you have to constantly iterate and tweak. And it's like creating a feedback loop and trying to see, you know, what is the level of engagement with a piece of content that you're putting out there, right? And how does it resonate with the audience that you really care about?
Yeah.
So it's an iterative process. It evolves. But as long as you are very genuine about what you're trying to solve for and you're authentic in your storytelling and not trying to be flash in the pan or using certain, say, hashtags and things like that, which might be trending just to be able to get ahead of everyone else, because that's not sustainable, right? You might be able to do it once or twice, but if you want to create like a compelling narrative, which is sustained over a period of time, regardless of the filter bubbles and the echo chambers, then you need to do it over a period of time consistently do it in a way that's meaningful for your community. So one way to think about it is, how is it that my story is helping others, make better decisions about things that they would want to buy, for instance, right? How is it that my story is helping someone become smarter about, say, their financial decisions, right? So it is a lot more about education. It's a lot more about advocacy, right? So being able to identify that niche space that you want to be known for, and how is it that your product or service can be attached to a larger context, if you will, right? So wherein you are trying to identify that area where you might be helping your audience along an issue that you'd want addressed, right? So it's almost like, you know, it's rather simple way to put it, but it's the most difficult thing to do, which is this whole idea of compassion, the idea of being able to put yourself in the shoes of your audience. And that's often the hardest part. It's always the data point of one, anecdote, right? So anec is like a data point of one. Because, you know, the one thing that you'd want to not do, and which is why I feel a lot of marketers are guilty of doing, is earlier we used to generalize and we used to have something called customer segments, right? So we used to think, oh, every 45-year-old with a certain household income living in a certain neighborhood is a certain customer segment, right?
Right.
We realize that that is not working. You know, it's sweeping generalizations and assumptions, which often do not lead to the best outcomes. Then came along, you know, this whole science of personas, right? So persona-based marketing, right? So if you think about it, you know, somewhere down the line, even the science of personas or was also sweeping generalizations. And therefore, you must realize that you always need to rely on much deeper research into your audience and being able to truly discern what they care about at the level of one person or one human being, which is to avoid generalizations that we cannot assume anything. And our audience is way more intelligent, smarter than we give them credit for. And therefore, it's in our best interest to be, one, authentic, two, genuinely trying to solve for their issues as opposed to trying to sell something.
Correct. Yeah, I think that's a very important point. And as you were giving these descriptions about how you get to that storytelling in a dynamic world, I kept thinking of different brands that popped into my mind. Like, you know, when you said data point of one, I kept thinking of Tesla, because when they came, of course, it was an innovative product itself. But if you look at how they, when they launched, there was hardly any uptake. And to in competition, General Motors and others were like putting so much of advertising money behind it. So that was one. Again, from the automotive world, Harley Davidson, you know, how they created this whole cult around their brand. So that data point of one, again, how did they build that whole narrative? And it's still going strong. Probably they have been iterative as well, as you said, visionary thinking. And maybe you can give more examples, but I think that whole point of iteration has a very strong sustainable factor, as well as it is, you know, a logical way to be authentic also. Only when you make mistakes, only when you know that you are, this is not what's serving your audience, is when you come back and iterate. So that is definitely sustainable.
No, absolutely. I mean, Tesla is a story that I love talking about. And, you know, the entire world knows Tesla for what they are currently, but a lot of people have probably forgotten the early days of Tesla and how the brand struggled because they didn't have a marketing dollar to spend, because their entire business was very, very capital intensive, and the cash burn rate was very high. They were not making any money, you know, and the initial cars that were sold were full of snags, so had a lot of service issues. But what Tesla had was an authentic story about changing the world into a cleaner, green energy world, right? And so that was their North Star. And they were able to have a community rally around that North Star. Right? So, and how some of their early adopters were the ones who actually lived with cars that were faulty, but never complained. In fact, they helped Tesla as a brand to improve the customer service by working closely with the R&D team within Tesla. And they were just early adopters and customers, but they were the initial community that was able to rally around the brand and truly believed in the purpose that Tesla is here, not just as a car company, but a company that is going to change the world for the better.
Yeah.
You took the example of Harley Davidson. I'm an avid motorcycle enthusiast myself. And so I can tell you that, you know, it's all about the community. It's all about being able to instill a sense of belonging, a sense of pride, a sense of purpose, a sense of meaning into a community that will rally around your brand, right? So, you know, I always also take this example of 90, 9, and 1. So if you had 100 customers, if you think about them, it's, again, a generalization, but allows you to have a mental model to picture this. In that, you know, 90 of those 100 customers will not bother about switching from your brand to another brand. 9 of those would care to a certain degree, but they can also be swayed. But is that one customer of the 100 who's a devoted fan? Mm. For you as a brand, it's to identify that one. Mm. And that one can rally 100 more, right? So being able to identify that one fan amongst your customers, and then bringing more on your side and being able to co-create stories, tell stories that make a difference and a meaningful you know, impact on that one, will then create a strong flywheel or a network effect that will allow you to create 100 more of those fans.
Right, right. And what you just said, that the mental model 99 and 1 is applicable everywhere, right? Like B2B or B2C. I'm also thinking of brands or businesses who are so technical and so B2B. They are also like, when you think about Tesla and Harley Davidson, you are also thinking of that one person who's buying and riding and the experience and able to share. But I'm talking about, you know, products that go into larger system of factories and stuff, and how that impacts the overall productivity, or, you know, the output of that business. So even that is this thing that you said about 99 and 1 is very much applicable in that setting as well.
Yes, let's take some examples, right? So you talked about B2B and how it's relevant, right? So B2B businesses are essentially businesses that are designed to be invisible to the end consumer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the two brands that I love in the context, one is an e-commerce brand called Shopify.
Yeah.
And the other is a payments brand called Stripe.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Shopify, for instance, right? So Shopify last year did $187 billion worth of gross volumes on its platform. It has thousands of small merchants that Shopify represents, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in that, they just use Shopify's front-end e-commerce store to be able to sell online. Right. So these are businesses which had physical brick and mortar stores, and Shopify helped them with digital rails for them to be able to sell online. While this figure is in itself very impressive, what's even more impressive is that, you know, the brands, the merchants that use Shopify, their overall revenue is in the tune of $450 billion, which means that these are the companies, these are the small merchants and big merchants who use Shopify to sell online, right? And it's an incredible business, if you think about it. It came from Canada. Again, a visionary storyteller, Tom Lutke, who actually, build these rails. And you can argue that, you know, this is like the non-Amazon Amazon. So while you think about Amazon, we don't think that, you know, Shopify is a competitor, because what Shopify is helping everyone do is not necessarily come on aggregated marketplace, but have a storefront of their own, right?
Yeah.
So it's actually changing the dynamic of the business model. It's democratizing e-commerce in a lot of ways for players within the ecosystem. And if you think about it, Shopify could have started with solving for every problem there is. Right, but they wanted to be the company that solves for everything, but not necessarily themselves. Right? So in a B2B world, it's a lot about partnerships and alliances. So they wanted to solve for payments, for instance. They solved for payments by partnering with the likes of a Stripe.
Yeah.
Right, but they didn't stop at Stripe. So they have about 740 odd payment partnerships, which allow for their merchants to offer every potential conventional and alternative payment method on a Shopify platform, right? So they didn't start with solving for it themselves, right? So it's an excellent example of being relevant to a community, and that their community is the merchants, right? The small merchants who wouldn't have had the bandwidth to be able to build an e-commerce storefront and be able to sell online, be able to transact online, be able to collect payments online, and do it in a way that's secure, you know, and do it at scale. So if you think about Shopify, it's an excellent example that we don't see Shopify. We see those storefronts, and we go and buy a favorite pair of denims without necessarily realizing that, you know, this entire experience is being powered by Shopify.
Correct.
Similarly with Stripe, right? So Stripe powers payment rails for n number of businesses online, but you and I don't necessarily realize that we're actually paying through Stripe, but we often do that, right? Again, visionary founders, two brothers, Irish brothers, Patrick and John Collison, and they went from Ireland to the Silicon Valley to be able to start and found this because they thought that they would not get that kind of opportunity in Ireland. And they started in 2009 and 10. If you think about 2009, 10, I mean, back then, payments were even more clunkier than they are currently, right? And they wanted to, transform.
For online.
Yeah. Yeah. So they wanted to transform this entire experience of payments. The way they've done that is, if you visit the Stripe website, if you're a developer, who's building a storefront or any kind of an experience and you want to integrate payments, the way you can seamlessly do it yourself, right?
Correct.
So Stripe's whole motto is do it yourself. So the kind of developer documentation, toolkits, and, even the front end, the back end experiences, it's so intuitive and you can get started. And within minutes, you can actually integrate Stripe with any website there is. And it's that seamlessness of thinking about their audience, which is, the developer community who can come on board and be able to integrate seamlessly, right? So, yeah. I mean, again, I can go on with other examples.
But I think I get the point what you're saying, that even in B2B, there are umpteen number of examples here who have thought about the customer, who have gotten that visionary storytelling through that thinking of one customer that they can impact, and they can build that brand narrative through that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So we spoke a lot about, you know, the storytelling part of it, where it felt, at least in the conversation, that we are all living in the digital world. And I think as marketers, we are always like digital first. You kind of adopt and keep adopting the next wave. What about the digital non-natives, people who are the boomers, who are still in the business, who have these stories to say, and probably they have done a lot more business and they have had that experience to share to the world? And how can they adopt storytelling in the digital world? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, so Surabhi, as you would recognize, a lot's changed because of the pandemic, in that, you know, we have a lot of pioneering generations who actually became digital natives during this time, thanks to the lockdown, and grandparents being introduced to digital devices by their grandchildren and so on and so forth. And we know that there's been a huge uptake. So that digital divide itself is shrinking, in that, you know, a lot of sort of those erstwhile generations are coming online, are recognizing the power of digital media. But having said that, I think it doesn't hurt to get started somewhere small, right? So essentially, you have to pick a niche, right? So you have to identify, again, back to the fundamental question, who do you want to be relevant for? Where is it that your audience or that anecdote congregates, right? So where is it that your audience is hanging out? What medium is that, right? So it could be, you know, a Facebook or an Instagram or a Twitter or a LinkedIn. You have to identify that platform or that medium, and then start small. You start with yourself, and, you know, everyone has interesting stories to tell, you know, so it's all about being authentic, all about being able to start somewhere, being able to identify where is it that your audience lives and who do you want to be relevant for.
Right.
And it doesn't hurt to get started and doing small sort of what I refer to as pilots or experiments.
Right.
Because it allows you to get some feedback. Right. Yeah. So feedback is important. And when you're starting out, I think, you know, and you're trying to build an audience, lean on friends and family to get to put something out there and get some feedback in. And that feedback loop helps you iterate, get better, and you can polish your messaging, and you can then continue to build on that, right? And it's absolutely fine to experiment and fail. That's the best part about some of these digital mediums. People have, as you know, receding attention spans, which also means that people don't remember a lot of mistakes for a long period of time.
Good one.
So it's absolutely fine to try things and try things even at the cost of failing. I think one of the reservations that some of the senior generations may have had is that fear of failure, which is where I think we need to get over that sort of inertia and be able to try a few things even at the cost of failing. I think That's the one thing that I think is important.
Yeah, a very good point there. And also, I feel that to the digital natives who are already, you know, talking to, you know, people who are hesitating to get on digital, I feel like don't spread out too thin across all these medium and places, because if you are experimenting, it is best to experiment in one place, do pilots in one medium, and then decide. And again, to your point, I'm just reiterating here that find where your audience is and experiment and communicate in that one particular medium, and then expand as you get more confident, isn't it?
True, absolutely. Continue.
Yeah. All right, Rahul, I think we have gone in so many different areas and in quite a bit of depth, but I can't resist asking you this. How can you be really authentic in this whole TikTok world? How can they bring out that whole authentic selves in this world where the short reels, short videos, and swipes?
Yeah, true. And you know what? It's not that I've solved for it, you know. So I also grapple with it as much as a marketer. So every day is a challenge.
Mm.
The question you have to therefore ask yourself is that, do you want to sort of ride the wave, if you will, and build something that's almost like a flash in the pan, you know, so you can get a lot of peaks and troughs, often peaks and troughs together. But over that, would you rather choose something sustainable, right? So authenticity allows you to build something sustainable. Two, I think it makes practical sense. I'll just give you the context of, you know, you might have heard how there's this whole movement where Google will be phasing out third-party cookies. You know, it's already been delayed. It was earlier to be 24, now it's probably 25. And, you know, that changes the dynamic of how you think about marketing and capturing of data exhaust, right?
Yeah.
Increasingly, people are becoming more aware of their own privacy and digital ownership and ownership rights. And therefore, as marketers, if you're not authentic, you'd not be able to capture the attention for a sustained period of time. As a marketer, what I truly want to have is a direct relationship or a rapport with my audience, as opposed to that relationship or that rapport being owned by a platform or a medium. What I mean by that is that, therefore, you know, this whole movement around building first party data set, which means that if I want to reach an audience that even if I am building it painfully one person at a time, but I'm building a relationship capital of reaching my audience directly and forming a rapport, as opposed to thinking that I can get away with spending marketing dollars on a particular medium and running those flashy sort of pieces of content, which don't necessarily capture attention for a sustained period of time.
Yeah. Interesting. So we spoke about taking one medium and doing pilots and tests on that. Now, in a business-to-business world, LinkedIn obviously shines out. But, you know, there has been an increasing trend of people building brands on Instagram or building brands on TikTok. I see so many B2B brands on TikTok, and it's amazing what all they have been able to put together in terms of content and context of the audiences. So what are your thoughts on this?
So if you think about it, most of the mediums are now gravitating towards becoming TikTok in certain ways, right? So TikTok has actually changed, if you think about it, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, they all look a bit like TikTok now.
Yeah.
They're increasingly adding features that only TikTok used to have at some point in time.
Right.
It essentially gives you a sense of how powerful this medium has been and how great the adoption has been. And it cuts across cultures, it cuts across generations. And therefore, you know, if that's the medium of choice of your audience, and, you know, even in the B2B world, if you think about it, the only difference between B2B and B2C, very simply put, in the context of storytelling, is that in the B2B world, your decision maker is not one consumer, but, you know, it's a committee of five people that you're trying to influence, right? So five people who are taking a decision on behalf of their business, right? So whether I'm buying a piece of software on behalf of the organization that I work for, I will not do that in isolation. I'm a committee of five. But even that committee of five needs to be influenced. And therefore, if that piece of software needs to be relevant to all five of them, and if they are congregating on a TikTok, then I will start there, right? So that's why you see a lot of these B2B brands also building pieces of content and trying to be relevant to their communities on a TikTok or wherever else that their audience is. Essentially, it's about being able to deeply understand the medium, right?
Yeah, right.
So you will think about a certain story, but it can be told differently on a LinkedIn compared with a TikTok. Right?
Yeah, true, right? So true. Video versus static content versus, you know, those carousel posts. And all of that, like there's just so much option these days. And what you said really makes sense, because if your decision makers to finally buy your products are all congregating at one platform, and it is easier to convey them messages or nurture them, you know, over a period of time through 30-second or a 1-minute reel, then so be it, right? Like it's finally that iterative model that we are going to try and figure out at the end of the day to make that sale. True, I think going forward, there may be many more such options, or within these medium, there are more, you know, things that we can experiment. I actually sometimes wonder if there is any way to, like, so Facebook and Instagram is obviously integrated. You can, you know, kind of post in two mediums together. That was, you know, sometimes I wonder if there is any other kind of integration possible across the social media, you know, not integration in terms of just push the content and it's just published everywhere, but integration in terms of how it can convert itself into different ways through these different mediums. So that would be interesting.
Yeah, I think that's where I think tools like ChatGPT might help, right? In fact, ChatGPT is being used and being deployed by marketers at scale to do exactly that, where it, you know, there's one piece of content and then doing using ChatGPT to do clever copywriting, which is native to, you know, here's a tweet versus here's a static post for a LinkedIn with a poster and here's a dynamic video that is being deployed by generative AI. So this clever tricks will always come up, and obviously generative AI is a great tool to have. But again, one should always remember and be mindful of it's still a tool, and you need to know what purpose or what end game are you using the tool for. Because what you don't want is to lose that sense of relevance and that sense of authenticity for your audience. Because if you do that at scale, you might in fact come across as not being really authentic. And then you might get lost in the crowd. And therefore, find that you'll have those tools, but you'd have to be mindful of always being relevant to the audience that you're trying to reach.
It's very, you already answered my next question, which was like, how can people transcend the mediums and keep building stories? Because, and you essentially just said that, you know, you have to remember what's your purpose and who you are serving to know how you can transcend different media and still create that narrative and build the brand. Rahul, I want to know, what are your thoughts on building thought leadership? Because you speak so much about storytelling. And also, I feel when you build thought leadership, there is a huge element of storytelling in that. So tell me your thoughts about building thought leadership.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I've been really mindful of doing for the last more than a decade as a marketer. Because I've led marketing for professional services and technology brands, wherein I thought it's a cluttered market space. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you know, being able to elevate the brand, thought leadership is absolutely critical. And how you build thought leadership is being able to identify that one or two or three areas of interest for the communities that you want to be relevant to. And really doubling down on the content that's educational, content that is meaningful, purpose-driven, and essentially makes your audience smarter. Mm. So if in a nutshell I had to sum it up, I would say thought leadership is about leading with thought, right? Which entails doubling down on research, identifying those key areas that you want to be known for, and then identifying how is it that you can take your audience on a journey to make them smarter about their decisions in those areas. Right. And it starts with deep research, both in terms of research on the market and the ecosystem, but also on your audience and what they truly care about. Mm-hmm. And then trying to find points of synergy where their interests and your purpose intersects. And then being able to methodically curate content-driven journeys where you take them on experiences. And that cuts across different media types, right? So it doesn't matter what form the content comes in. So it could be in 10 different forms. It could be long-form content, short-form content. It could be blurb or whatever. But essentially, it's very consistent. And it is always looking at that point of intersection of the interest areas of the communities that you want to be relevant for. Mm. And where is it that they are looking for content? What is it that they would find most meaningful? Right. Yeah. So let me give you an example. I think it might better serve the context if I were to give you an example. Right. I was leading this effort of driving thought leadership and advocacy for a payments brand, which was essentially a two-sided marketplace. On one side, we were serving all the large telecom providers in the world. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, we were serving the brands in the app economy, which means, you know, the marketplaces like Apple and Google, but also OTT brands like Netflix and Spotify. Mm. When I had to build thought leadership where I wanted to be relevant to both Netflix and Spotify, but also telecom providers, we started with saying, what is it that we should then develop content around? And we identified that the coming in of 5G networks is something that we should develop thought leadership around. Why? Because, telecom brands are spending billions on infrastructure upgrades and buying spectrum for doing 5G networks, which will increase and expand the data speeds and mm-hmm. the consumer experiences that are enabled by mobile devices. But at the same time, how does it truly change things meaningfully for them? Because, you know, voice and data are getting commoditized. How is it that they're able to monetize that 5G network better? And that is by building that essential service layer, by providing compelling content experiences to their consumers, which is, some OTT brands like Netflix and Spotify, but also building on top of that consumer experience layer, right? And similarly, for, the OTT brands, how is it that the 5G networks can usher in a new period of growth by them being able to realize and recognize the importance of building experiences which allow for consumers to better relate to the difference between a 4G and a 5G network, right? And therefore, creating the need for the OTT brands to partner with telecom brands and for the telecom brands to partner with the OTT brands, right? So identify that sweet spot and just, created like a series of pieces of content, including long-form content, thought leadership-based, research-based white papers to short-form content, but essentially talking about that intersection where the business opportunity for both the telecom brands and OTT brands converged, and being able to go that methodically. And, it took us time, but we essentially were able to then create that very strong niche for ourselves in what was a very crowded marketplace.
Wow. That definitely was a very nice example.
In the B2B context, I mean, getting the voice of the customer as part of your narrative is extremely important, right? So, I mean, when I said we created a lot of long-form thought leadership pieces, they had very strong contributions from people within the ecosystem, right? So we had contributing voices from leading brands like Netflix's, Spotify's, but also leading telecom brands, right? So their voices were part of what shaped that thought leadership. That's essentially important because you can't do it in isolation. Similarly, in the consumer context, you see that the brands that have really done well, particularly some brands in the fast-moving consumer goods or fast fashion, for instance, they've been able to very heavily use user-generated content. So they create these catalysts or these triggers for their consumers to create content. Then they use that and leverage that content to be able to then further their storytelling efforts.
Nice. Thank you, Rahul. This has been at so many different levels, deep, very expansive, both vertical and horizontal. The discussion has gone from visionary storytelling to how you can be authentic to how do you use digital. And of course, how do you build your thought leadership? So thank you so much for coming on the show. I think this has been a very interesting conversation. Before I say bye to you, I want the audience to get in touch with you. So where can they get in touch with you?
Sure. So I'm fairly active on LinkedIn and Twitter. So more than welcome to connect there.
Sure. Wonderful. I'll also put in your LinkedIn and Twitter links in the show notes so audience can get direct links from there.
Sounds good. Yes. This has been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Rahul. It's absolutely my pleasure.
The first step to build your thought leadership is with a powerful professional personal bio. Personal bios can be used on LinkedIn as a summary, on your website, or can be shared with others as your introduction on a public platform. If you do not have a fantastic personal bio which talks volumes about your professional experience and your expertise, help is around. Jot My Bio is a done-for-you professional bio writing service that showcases the best of your unique self. Visit jotmybio.com, that is jotmybio.com today, and get yourself a unique handcrafted personal bio. I truly appreciate you joining me on the podcast today. And to stay updated on the latest episodes, make sure you have subscribed to the Making of a Thought Leader podcast on your favorite podcast player. See you next time.